This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. During the presidential campaign, a Republican women's group printed what they called Obama bucks. This is a fake bill that showed a food stamp with a bucket of fried chicken and a watermelon on it. Now, that might be a mega obvious example of racial stereotypes in action, but don't most of us have some moments when we look at a person and make a judgment based on race and not much else? Where do stereotypes come from? How do they change our interactions with other people? And can and should they be vanquished? We're continuing our series on race on a conversation with LaRue Lewis, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Black Studies at the City College of New York. Welcome, LaRue.
Thanks for having me.
So this presidential campaign was like a racial litmus test. How much stereotyping did we see? And was it good in a way to see it for what it was?
I think this presidential election marked a time when we got to see race up in front to everybody. So there was a lot of racial stereotyping happening in obvious ways, like you mentioned with the Inland Empire food stamp example, but also in subtle ways, notions of who's going to be tough on crime, who's going to be tough on immigration. These things that weren't explicitly discussed were often linked to the candidates. Also, McCain and Obama's discussion of who was playing the race card, do I look different than the person on the dollar bill, was a discussion and allusion to racial stereotypes. So it was a great opportunity to think about race in an upfront fashion that isn't always present.
Now, how do you define a stereotype?
I define a stereotype as a gross generalization that may be based on a kernel of truth. Most stereotypes come from a historical narrative. Some of the most traditional ones are African Americans like chicken or white men can't play basketball. All of these things try to take something that may have some truth and may not and extend it and apply it to everyone. The basic goal of a stereotype, be it racial or gender, is to limit the possibility of the group that they're talking about. Limit the possibility that white men play basketball. Limit the possibility that Asian Americans don't do well at math. These are the type of things that stereotypes are intended to do.
Of course, it's funny when you mention the basketball issue, which you've got the movie White Men Can't Jump. But also basketball, the initial phases of basketball were all white teams. And you had black folks kind of breaking into what was, a segregated sport. What is the evolution of stereotypes over time? I mean, in a way, a movie like White Men Can't Jump was an acknowledgement that there was a stereotype, but also that you could be playful about it. So how do these discussions about stereotypes evolve over time?
Stereotypes evolve based on where we are as a society. So in the past, you mentioned with basketball, which was a predominantly white sport, just like baseball was a predominantly white sport, when there were separate facilities in which people were engaging in these activities, the notion was African Americans, black people, aren't qualified to participate, so we keep them separate. Once the society shifted, all of a sudden we shift from these sports are white territories, or traditionally white territories, to they're black dominated, to now to the point when you look at an NBA game, folks suggest, well, there aren't many white players in there, so we need affirmative action for white players. In fact, stereotypes correspond to the racial landscape we're at.
LaRue, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And when we're looking at that landscape, it's important to note who's represented. So when we're talking about education, who are the people who are achieving? Who are the people who are graduating? So there's an ongoing narrative now about the stereotype of African Americans not valuing education. But if you look at it historically, African Americans were the people who supply their own schools, who use their tax money to develop independent schools when the U.S. government wouldn't fund their schools, who fought for Brown versus the Board of Education, and continued to provide legislation that said, we have to challenge and fight for the right of education. Contemporarily, the stereotype is that African Americans are not invested in education, but historically, we see how that shifts.
Now that we're going to have an African-American family in the White House, do you think that that's going to affect stereotypes? I mean, one of the conversations that we've had here, we're going to, in a second, bring someone else into the conversation with you and play a few examples of comedy. But one thing that we've discussed here is this perception that because of people's fear of stereotypes, there's just not going to be a lot of comedy about the Obamas because people are too afraid of stereotypes. But how do you think things are going to play out?
Well, I think there's been some really good conversation about the question of comedy, because oftentimes comedy goes to the lowest common denominator, which is a stereotype. What the Obamas do is challenge comedy writers and folks who are interested in making things funny to actually go beyond the obvious. So it's not comical to fall to a notion that all of a sudden the White House becomes painted black, right? That falls flat. How do we look at the different ways in which the Obamas relate to people, how cool Barack Obama is, how smooth he is, and actually play on some of the more subtle issues that represent these figures? So I think it's going to be a challenge where our comedy goes beyond simply race and looks at the other factors that are happening in the White House. Who's there? What kind of dogs do they get? Who comes to visit? But not relying simply on these tropes that have been established. So it's going to be much like you saw with other presidential candidates, in which race is not the dominant element that's played on. So hopefully we'll have an expansion in the comic opportunity.
All right, Professor, we're going to bring another voice into the conversation. He's a blogger who writes under the name Macon DeTourne, and his blog is called Stuff White People Do. It explores stereotypes and assumptions from a white person's perspective. Macon, welcome.
Hi, Farai. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So on your blog, you describe yourself as a white guy trying to find out what that means, especially the white part. What do you mean by that?
Well, my email address is unmakingmacon@gmail.com, and by that I mean that I'm in the process of writing the blog. I'm sort of trying to untrain myself from what I see as what white society has done to me, has trained me to have certain proclivities and tendencies as a white person. So what I tried to do with the blog, I initially said it's called Stuff White People Do, and I initially set it up as a response to Stuff White People Like, that enormously popular blog which became a book. And I was also working with Peggy McIntosh's article on white privilege, where she lists 46 examples of privilege. And the Stuff White People Like blog is listing daily examples of stuff white people like. So I thought about what could I list as just one daily example of things that white people tend to do. And Peggy McIntosh says in her article that she wasn't able to keep these in mind until she wrote them down.
Well, let's talk about something that you wrote about, and you're giving these examples day by day, but you talk about going to a dinner party and having a conversation with someone who's Asian American. So what happened, and why did you find it noteworthy to write about?
Yeah, well, since I started doing this, I've noticed that I think about my whiteness a lot more than I was before that, and I really think about it every day. And I spend time pondering things that I've done in the past, and I remembered a couple parties that I'd gone to, and I'd always wondered about it before, what happened, why it happened. And what happened was that they were both potluck parties, and at each party an Asian person had brought a food that seemed Asian. So I walked up to them, and I thought I was being friendly. I just asked them what the food was and how they made it, if they made it, and I knew they were foreign students, so I asked if they ate it back home with their families. And in both cases, these two people were kind of cool to my questions. They didn't seem to take them as friendly at all. So I got to thinking about that and thought about some other things I'd read by Asian American writers and realized that I was enacting a common white tendency to make this association between Asians and food. And it turns out that it's, once I started looking at this and thinking about it that way, that's all over the place. It's in movies, it's in books written by Asian Americans. And in fact, there's this term to describe that called food pornography for when an Asian person might, I use a clip from a movie by Ang Lee called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, mm-hmm. where it opens with this beautiful shots of somebody cutting up a fish and cooking it. And the movie's all centered around food, and that movie's been charged with catering to this white tendency to connect Asian people to food.
Well, let me bring LaRue back into that. Is it a stereotype if it's something that in some way is initiated by the in-group, by Asian Americans, by blacks, by Latinos? I mean, is it a stereotype if it's something that you see in someone's culture?
Well, I think that it can be a stereotype. Most stereotypes have some truth to them. Do Asian folks cook? Yes. Do white folks cook? Yes. Right? If there's a love for food and culture, that is fine. But when you start to identify people with certain things, only Asian Americans cook fish and prepare it in this way, and they make the most, the best food. When you start to take that association and say, that's characteristic of their culture and other things are not, is when a stereotype comes in. That's when it becomes dangerous, because stereotypes are based on the idea of power, that I can walk up to someone at a party and say, I know where you're from, I know what you eat, and I know what you're like. That's what I think making is signaling to us, that there's a wider idea that's happening behind these things. With a stereotype, you get a kernel, you get an idea, and you say, oh, I know that certain groups behave in this way, which can be very consequential to how we live our everyday lives.
Macon actually has a video of Dave Chappelle. You have this on your blog, talking about African Americans and food. Let's take a listen.
I was in Mississippi doing a show, and I go to the restaurant to order some food, and I say to the guy, I say, I would like to have, and before I even finish my sentence, he says, the chicken! I said, what the f***? I could not believe it. Could not believe that s***. This man was absolutely right. I said, how did he know that I was going to get some chicken?
All right, Dave Chappelle, much missed from television. He dropped a couple of dirty bird words we can't use. But, Macon, what does that joke say to you?
Well, it says a similar thing, that this association that gets made in the white mind between non-white groups of people and their food happens with more than Asian Americans and Asians, as I was saying before. And I think, as LaRue said, it can come from the culture itself. But there's a power there, and that's the main problem with it, or a big problem with it, is that white people don't realize that they're belittling people of color when they make these overt associations between them and their food. They're reducing them to that connection.
LaRue, stereotypes can come from some strange places. Now, an Al-Qaeda operative recently released a statement condemning President-elect Barack Obama. He referred to Obama as a house Negro. Now, house Negro used to be a sort of inside the black family term, insulting, but the kind of insult that a black person would use for another black person. How do you think that someone from Al-Qaeda even knew how, you know, the term house Negro was used and then decided to use it?
Well, I think first that African American culture and our cultural norms are so international. They happen locally, but people around the world watch and have responded to African American culture, whether it be music, whether it be dress. And so when things like what the Al-Qaeda operative said come up, or when Ralph Nader uses a term like Uncle Tom, we have to recognize that our cultural jokes that may even be inside, right, are seen by the outside. And the consequence is when we're using it within a group, we may have understanding about the history of where house Negro comes from, the institution of slavery, and the person who was in the house having closer associations with the white master. However, someone from the outside may not understand that historical complexity and may suggest, well, you know what, Barack Obama is simply working for those who are in power who are whites. Whereas part of the conversation about house Negro is, even though the house Negro was in the house, they were still a Negro. They weren't fully incorporated. So when you're coming from the outside and using some of these inside discussions, you often miss the subtleties and the complexities.
All right. I'm going to go back to a classic stereotype, and this is the black mammy. Here's a clip of Hattie McDaniel's portrayal in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, now, Miss Scarlett, you come on and be good and eat just a little.
No.
Honey.
I'm going to have a good time today. And do my eating at the barbecue.
If you don't care what folks says about this family, I does. I has told you that you can always tell a lady but the way that she eat in front of folks like a bird.
All right, food comes up yet again. But LaRue, the main point here is that a lot of people, on the one hand, were glad to see a strong black character in some ways, but on the other hand, in this very stereotypical role. How have we come a long way since then?
I think we have made some progress, but we have updated our stereotypes. So the stereotype of Mammy, the black woman who is very strong and very service-oriented, so service-oriented that she helps the white family and neglects her own. We can see those images repeated in some of the more contemporary elements like Queen Latifah's Bringing Down the House, or even the notion of the Sapphire, the black woman who is highly sexual and doesn't handle responsibility. When we look at VH1's portrayal of New York on I Love New York, these images come up over and over again, but if we're not thinking about their historical context and why we should challenge them, they'll go unnoticed.
Now, Macon, when you think about these classic stereotypes, do you think we've come a long way?
Well, I don't know how long a way we've come, but of course we've made some progress. But yes, there's still a lot of progress to be made. I think there still are, we are back to food, but I think there's a lot of food products that still have racist images on them. I think the Land O'Lakes butter image is, I've done a post about this too, that the maiden who's holding up butter there in her stereotypical maiden dress kind of freezes an image for other American people of Indians in the past. And I think there are some other products out there that still cling to these images. So the Obama waffles that some idiots made for the doing outside of a Republican event during the campaign, it's an extreme example, but actually it's not really all that far off the mark from some products that are still out there on the shelves.
LaRue, what about the idea that there are positive stereotypes, that it is positive that black people are considered athletic or positive that Asian Americans are considered academic? Do you think that these stereotypes are really positive?
I don't think they're positive in their social consequence. I think people may say them as if, well, it's good that African Americans have a proclivity towards athletics. But the catch is the flip side of the coin. If you say that a group is especially good at one thing, what are you saying they're not talented at? So if you say Asian Americans are excellent at calculus, what does it mean if you're an Asian American person who is not good at calculus but is an amazing poet? How do you create a space and an opportunity to expand and do what you love to do without people saying, wait, why don't you end up going into this traditional path that many folks have? So these positive stereotypes still operate to limit the opportunity of people, which makes them negative in their outcomes.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you, Farai.
Thank you.
We were hearing from R. LaRue Lewis, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Black Studies at the City College of New York. He joined us from NPR Studios in New York, and the blogger who goes by the name Macon DeTournay writes the blog Stuff White People Do.